Taj and Adam, how are you guys?
Hi, Andy. Very good to see you.
Very good to see you. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm well. Thanks for having us.
So I first noticed you guys. My friend John Finnick had you on a different program, and he was referencing First Nordic Metals and had some really good things to say about them. I believe he met you guys at a conference in D.C., Washington, D.C., that got my attention, and he just told me to start doing some due diligence, and so that's where we're at. So what I'd like to do is, Taj, maybe start with you. Let's talk about the vision of the company, and what's the goal, and what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, thanks, Andy. I think we're really in a unique position after the merger of Goldline Resources and Barsele Minerals. Which just happened kind of mid-late February, so quite recently, and we rebranded the company as now First Nordic Metals, and are pushing it. Really, our vision here is to create Europe's next gold camp, and we're sitting in a terrain that I think is probably one of the most highly prospective, underexplored regions in the world. And, we're sitting on a resource of around 2.5 million ounces already. I think that's already critical mass enough. And I think that's just scratching the surface. I think you're going to potentially have a camp here well beyond that. We've got 100 kilometers of strike, that 2.5 ounces of gold. It takes up only, less than 10% of that. And the rest of it's kind of been underexplored. There's already some very interesting targets. But ultimate vision here is to create the next major gold camp.
Got it. Adam, if you can comment, tell me a little bit about Taj and yourself and the management team, your experience and what you guys bring to the table.
So I think what you'll see with our management team in general is a lot of experience at getting transactions completed. I was a founder of a company that was sold to Agnico back in 2012 for a couple hundred million dollars. Taj has been, led a company that went from a 10 million market cap company to a 750 million market cap company, probably the largest development silver project in the world. Our chairman, Toby Pierce, is running a oil and gas company out of Egypt, and he's had various successful transactions as well. And our founders, Gary Cope, sold Orco Silver for $250 million. So our team is filled with executives that focus on shareholder value and creating value through transactions and have had a successful track record of doing that. And I founded Goldline Resources 3-4 years ago. I was brought in to take it public. It's in this fantastic jurisdiction with this really underexplored belt, one of the probably last true underexplored greenstone belts in the world. And I was lucky enough to meet Taj last summer and bring him in as CEO of Goldline, which, as you may know, immediately led to the merger with Barsele, and we consolidated this 100-kilometer belt. So, you're now combining a great jurisdiction, a great, technical project with massive upside on both the existing resource and the belt, but most importantly, led by, a proper capital markets leader who has successfully delivered multiple transactions and successes to the market.
Excellent. Taj, tell me about yourself. Adam went a little bit into it, but if you could go a little bit more into detail.
Yeah. So, in my last major role prior to joining Goldline, I joined in October or so, and then just a couple of months after the Barsele deal was announced. So fresh in the seat now here, but prior to that, I was the founding president and CEO of Discovery Silver. We kind of were early stage kind of company, catched up a bit and then went out, did some very interesting M&A and took the company from about 5-10 million market cap going public and took it to, as Adam had noted, over 750 million market cap. Huge increase in trading volume, obviously, steady progress on that side. And just it became one of the preeminent names, Discovery Silver. So I was there for a better part of 6 years. Prior to that, kind of overlapping with that, I was one of the founding directors of GT Gold, copper, big porphyry project in British Columbia. And we took that public in kind of late 16, early 17, and it was sold in 2020 to Newmont for $400 million. So that was another great success that worked out well. And then prior to that, I was actually involved on the production side. I was a VP at Timmins Gold, which we actually operated in northern Mexico, despite the name. But we're producing about 150,000 ounces a year. So I was part of that, getting that project ramped up and being, part of being a producer in Mexico. So I learned a lot about Mexico from that, which helped me then obviously in discovery. And then prior to that, I worked on the capital market side, which was invaluable as well. Two years at Macquarie Capital Markets as an analyst, equity analyst. And then prior to that, to kind of start off my career and really help build it, I worked at Inco, which was then acquired by Vale. So Inco was, kind of $5-6 billion company, got much larger. And then Vale took it over. And we all know, Vale is one of the major diversifieds in the world. So it was really neat to be able to go and work in various parts of the world, from Brazil to New Caledonia to Northern Canada, and get to see all the operations and be part of some very, very large capital projects with Vale. So yeah, that's my background. I'm a metallurgist and a mineral process engineer, but been on this side of been mining for my whole career, and with kind of a varied experience all the way from exploration to development to production.
On your website and your corporate presentation, then that's really one of the things that really stood out to me was probably the experience. Well, a couple of things really stood out. Probably experience in capital markets that both of you have really stood out to me. But then Taj, what I think, I don't know if this is a fluke or if you just made your luck. You've had some great timing in your cell. And I was looking at the Newmont transaction just recently. I mean, just how did you do that? You just have gotten in some right place at the right time.
Yeah, listen, we all know that this is how this space is, right? Sometimes you just kind of, you luck out. But initially, when I think, for me, looking at opportunities, and I applied the same kind of criteria, especially as I'm getting more experienced, as you look at the jurisdiction you're going to be in, can you move things forward? Does this have the potential to be a world-class project? Can you surround yourself with the right team to push this forward? And once you've got kind of those two, three major things ticked, the boxes ticked for those, things should work out. I think a lot of it for investors is management team, because a lot of the other stuff has already been taken care of. You know, they've picked the right jurisdiction. You know, they've picked the right asset. If it's a team that's done it before and had past success. But yeah, I cannot say it's all, it has nothing to do with some lucky timing too, but no, it has worked out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, the asset, if you would. So what I look for is a world-class management team, check that box, and now tell me about the asset itself and in Sweden. But let's talk about the asset first, as opposed to the jurisdiction.
Adam, maybe you want to start.
Yeah, maybe I'll start. So just to give you a bit of history, Goldline went public in, I think it's 2020, late 2020, 21. And it was the opportunity that precipitated out of the fall of the market in 2016, 15. And at that time, a lot of the ground that we had was owned by B2 Gold and Dragon Mining and Orion and, various other companies. And just for lack of capital and exploration, those licenses became available, and our partners, EMX Royalty, in the bottom of the market, they grabbed these projects, immediately when they came out of this moratorium. So it was well-timed. They had been in Sweden for, 10 years already. So they were watching these things closely. And in Sweden, when you drop projects, they have to sit there for a year in a moratorium. So EMX grabbed all the ground around the main asset, which is the Barsele deposit, a 2.5 million ounce gold mine. And what that meant was we controlled 80% of the belt and Barsele controlled 20% of the belt, but Barsele had the majority of the value because it had 2.5 million ounces and it had Agnico as its joint venture partner leading it. So the asset that we're talking about is now a combined 100 kilometer belt, 100,000 plus hectares, in one of the, most underexplored top jurisdictions you could imagine. So the asset is a 100 kilometer structure that we can now go find multiple deposits on. We've already made new discoveries, and we have a cornerstone asset, which is the Barsele deposit, which we know, was discovered in 2014, has now been advanced with 165,000 meters, And, you know, most notably when the merger was happening, Taj did a bunch of due diligence, and I'll let him talk about that. But before we merged the companies, we knew that we had all the real exciting exploration blue sky. And we know that, you know, Barsele had this fantastic asset that we believed was fantastic. And when the merger was being done, you know, we redid a resource, we did an internal mine plan. And I think what was most exciting to Taj was back then, you know, this is a deposit today. At today's gold prices, this is a deposit. And, you know, maybe Taj, you could jump in and speak a little bit more about the kinds of things we can talk about, you know, in general.
Yeah, and I'd like to follow up with that, Taj. What is the potential for growth? Because Adam hit on very well what you guys have. And then, yeah, I'm assuming that's what Adam's talking about, growth. What did your due diligence show?
So, listen, when I do my due diligence, I found a pretty simple way to look at things is assume no upside. That's all for free. So what's there right now?
Right.
And so we looked at the deposit as it is 2.5 million ounces. And to me, right away, that's a critical mass, right? It used to be maybe 1 million ounces was really the number. Now it's about 1.5 million because you kind of want the first part of the mine plan to cover the capex. But long and short of it, 2.5 million ounces, that's some serious critical mass. And then, you know, there hasn't been a PEA done study, of course, on the project. Of course, there's obviously been quite a bit of internal work done by Agnico, but I took it and I said, let's just do our own internal PEA on it. And don't assume any upside, which I'll add and I'll talk about in a second, but is there a mine there right now? And, you know, we really stress test it. It took a lot of kind of costing info from nearby operations, similar operations. We're really, really, really exhaustive on it. And simply put, it was pretty clear and straight away, it's a mine right now. That was at $1,800 gold. It probably even substantially lower. I mean, Agnico's resources, I believe, were running about $1,300 gold. So listen, it's a mine. Then for me, a 2.5 million ounce mine, that's enough of a company maker as its own. But then what's extra? It was pretty obvious to see even when you look at sections, long sections, and you understand these kinds of systems, this will grow. To me and to our geology team, this felt like it could get to 4 to 5 million ounces pretty easily just by simply exploring at depth. You think we've only kind of been, it's only drilled to about 500, 600 meters. We've already know we've hit below like close to a kilometer. Geophysics is showing this thing could continue well below a kilometer. Even along strike, there's areas to fill in. So like a number like 4 to 5, I think is actually very reasonable for kind of a stretch target. And then you kind of wrap that all up and go, also, we own 50 kilometers of strike to the south, 50 kilometers of strike to the north. What's the probability of us finding another one of these deposits in an area that's really never been explored? And it's an it's a greenstone belt, just like the Abitibi in Quebec and Ontario. And on this kind of strike length, you'd have 10, 12 different companies. And we own it all. Like we're 100% owned it. Other than the Barsele, which is a joint venture, we own the vast majority of this belt. And so for me, I said, well, 2.5 million ounces, hopefully that goes to 4 or 5. And maybe we put another couple deposits together of 2-3 million ounces. Now you're talking about something very, very serious. And I think that's the ultimate vision. We're gonna go and test it and slowly build up targets. But that's the ultimate test. But, you get an idea of how I look at things is assume no upside. Don't pay for any upside. Well, what's there right now? And I think, it's fantastic value. And, you know, just looking at market cap, Barsele used to be worth over 200 million market cap by itself. Goldline by itself at one time was worth 75 million market cap at much lower gold prices than we have now. I mean, it's a different environment, but that goes to show you, you know, what these could be worth. And now putting them together, it truly was a kind of M&A that was done for a reason. Sometimes you'll see M&A, well, let's take this asset in this part of the world and put it with this other producing asset in this part of the world. It's for no reason, but this was real synergistic, natural, and obvious M&A. So a bit of a long answer, but that's my thought.
No, well said. Again, I want to always hear what's the worst case scenarios. And really, as I see it, and I'm doing my own due diligence, the worst case scenario is 2.5 million. So, which is a very good worst case scenario, but I do want to present for myself as well as any viewers and listeners, just, yeah, what's an upside target here? Adam, if you could talk about the jurisdiction here, and I must confess, I myself am not familiar with Sweden. I've always been in Northern Canada, or in Canada, Latin America, some South Africa, but never Sweden, even though I've known they're very heavy natural resources. So if you could educate myself and the listeners and viewers on why Sweden is a great jurisdiction or a jurisdiction that you need to navigate appropriately, please fill us in.
Yeah, I mean, I've now had, you know, 3 or 4 years of experience of working in Sweden. So obviously this is one of the top, you know, political jurisdictions in the world. Tenure is never a risk. You have no fear of tenure. You've got very clear mining laws, very clear permitting paths. You know, just a great stable jurisdiction to be working in. And there's, you know, if you're looking to invest in stable jurisdictions, you look at North America, you look at Scandinavia. You know, these right. maybe Australia. You're not dealing with a lot of the problems you're seeing maybe in South America or Central America or Africa. And, you know, as when it comes to geology, the greenstone belts around the world have produced hundreds of millions of ounces of gold. I mean, this has been, these have been the most exciting exploration targets around the world. And the central Lapland, essentially the Scandinavian greenstone belts, have only produced maybe 10 million ounces of gold. So, and that's not because there's no gold there. It's because really they only opened up to foreign investment in the mid 90s. So back in, you know, 100 years ago here in Canada, we were pickaxe and running around and finding gold here. You know, these eureka moments in the Canadian markets are very common. Sweden only opened to foreign capital in the mid 90s. So you had this rush of companies going in there. And if you look at since the mid 90s to today, you've had maybe 15 years of good exploration. And to give you an example, I made a discovery on my third drill hole on the southern part of our belt at Goldline with no geophysics. It was really just, it was geochemistry and some bot drilling that identified, you know, an outcrop, and boom, we hit on our third hole. So it was a novel discovery. It's on the same belt. And again, this is why everyone, and you've seen over the last 5 years, Rupert Resources has had a, you know, tremendous success in Finland, and it's, you know, gone from 0 ounces to 4 million ounces in like 2 or 3 years. So you have the opportunity to create a $1 billion company here. You have got stable tenure. And even more recently, the government has changed to be more of a, you know, shifted towards the right, very pro mining, new mining permits being issued. You've got, you know, the critical minerals. The Euro in general is really pushing for critical minerals independence, and Scandinavia, and Sweden particularly, is very open to new mining opportunities. So we've got, you know, some of the most exciting geology in the world. You've got stability to be able to work there. You've got a great labor force and known miners. And I should put into perspective, gold has been found in Sweden for thousands of years already, thousands. And if you look at the mining history of Sweden, the base metals, the industrial minerals, a lot of the material provided in the Second World and First World Wars were out of Sweden. And Boliden, as a mining company, is on the intersecting belt where we have our deposit. There's a gold line belt and there's a Skellefteå base metals belt. And Boliden has found about 150 deposits there. And I think have mined about 25 to 30 of them. So this is a long-standing mining jurisdiction. This has only been opened up recently to foreign investment, modern exploration, new geophysics techniques, cost-effective ways to make discoveries. And we are, you know, fortunate enough to have put together this amazing portfolio that that we expect over the next many years is going to be very fruitful on the discovery side and the development side.
Got it. Yeah, I just, it's interesting. It's, I've been doing this for 30 years, but Sweden, I just was never on my radar. And I think it's just, as you pointed out, Adam, it's air quotes, it's just so new. Meaning it's been around forever, obviously, but just this influx of money and just opening up is just a recent thing in the last few decades. Question for both of you. Really, the last box I check as an investor is financing and money. And also how, when relate that, how do you protect, protect might be the wrong word, but how do you look out for retail investors? Because I always have a fear of being, just not being listened to, but also just being my shares becoming less valuable over time. So if you could both comment about that, just the financing, what you got in the bank, as well as how do you protect me as a retail investor? That'd be great.
Adam, maybe you want to start? I can check.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll give you an example. Historically, Barclays was very protective to shareholder capital and dilution. And of course, they had a joint venture partnership where Agnico is spending all the money. So Agnico will earn up to 70% of the Barclays project with absolutely no cost to us in general. You know, my philosophy in general was to, you know, we made the discovery, we had a very poor market, and I really didn't want to dive too deep into diluting the company at a time that maybe more strategic things could be done. So though it took a little bit of time, with a little bit of time and patience and protecting, you know, the shareholders the best we could, we were able to bring in Taj, and then that led to Taj bringing in Barclays and the merger happening. And now we've got sort of the foundational asset being protected here by, you know, Agnico's commitment to continuing to advance the asset. And now we can work our valuation, get our story up, and, you know, raise money at higher prices and have less dilution. So it's been a win so far for all the people involved. And, you know, we've got about $1 million cash, and we will go to the market, but we've got warrants that bring capital to the company. We've got, you know, cash constraints where we don't spend money if we don't have to. We cut costs wherever we can, and we're very careful with our capital. So I think, you know, this company should be 100 million market cap plus with what we have today. Taj and I will continue to get that story out, and the market is moving in our direction. But, you know, we're sitting on, you know, just about $1 million. We will raise at some point. We'd like to do that higher, obviously. And, you know, I might add, we've also got assets that we could potentially joint venture and even sell. We've got an entire greenstone belt in Finland that we bought from Agnico 3 years ago. And now we've got, you know, various parties completing due diligence on that. And we may be able to monetize an asset, use that to, you know, drive the company forward, continue to get the story out, and find the right environment where, you know, ultimately we want to be well capitalized. We want to go raise $30, $40, $50 million. But we don't want to do that at a 40 million market cap company. You know, we want to do that at 100, 150, $200 million market cap. Time the market well, which, as you know, Taj has got the a bit of a horseshoe when it comes to timing. So he's, you know, he's watching closely. You know, he joined us when we were 6 cents a share. And here we are at, you know, 25 cents a share. And the market has improved drastically since Taj joined. So he brings the tailwinds. And
some salt over my shoulders.
You know. Throw Taj, maybe you can comment a bit more, but I think that's kind of our general, you know, financing strategy.
Yeah, I think a big thing to note that I like a lot about the capital structure, Andy, is 21% is owned by insiders. That's a big number, right? You don't see that a lot. So we've been buying on market, both Adam and I, buying in financings, and we'll continue to, you know, like we're here, not, you know, we're here for the equity to go. And
can I interrupt you? I'm so sorry to interrupt you. You just said something really key and critical to me. You're buying at the market, in the market. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
That is huge. So any listeners, and we'll have a lot that are listening to that, that is something that I look for. So go ahead. Thank you.
Exactly. So the actual number, the 20-21%, I think is a lot bigger than most juniors. I think that's something to be proud of. And it shows we've got skin in the game, and we want this to move. And we are shareholders, ultimately. And like from the previous two stories we talked about that I was a part of, both Discovery and GT, I can actually say this. There wasn't one down round. Think about it. We did 6-7 raises. Every round was an up round, not even one down round. Now sometimes things change on you, but again, I was lucky. Not even one down round for both stories. And that's exactly how we plan to do this, right? You raise at the right time, unlock some value, get to the next step. Now you've brought the company value higher. Then do it again. But ultimately, you know, the overarching message is we are shareholders, and that share price and equity value is just as important to us as it is to the retail investors, for sure.
Yeah. I'm just looking at, again, you're seeing if I missed anything, and thank you so much for that. That to me, what you just said was such a big deal. So I wanted to again stress that to any listeners and viewers, and don't be a circle, is that you want to see management buyers in the market. So any parting thoughts, Adam, any parting thoughts that you have here?
You know, parting thoughts for me would be I experienced a great precious metals market that went from 2007 or 8 to 2012. And we're nowhere near those times. And here we are, we've printed 10 to 20 times more money than we did, which crystallized that move in gold. To think we'd be at $2,350, $2,400 gold and still have very little interest in the majors is, baffling to me and very exciting, because I could feel and I can sense what's brewing. If there's one thing I've had, it's decent timing in the precious metal space. And when you combine, an incredible portfolio of projects like we have with great shareholders, with great management, guys like Taj and even Mark Legault on our board, he's an Agnico, veteran with 25 years at Agnico. We've got great partners. It's really, when the market really does turn, the cream will really rise to the surface. And projects with 2.5-3 million ounce base case of ounces with exploration upside and great teams and controlled structures are the ones that are going to really accelerate first. And I think we're very close to that timing. The next 12 months, I think, are going to be incredibly exciting. A little bit of interest around the political situation in America, I think will be important for the price of gold. But never in my career have I, been a part of something this exciting and this meaningful, and to be in the right jurisdictions with the right people is just an incredible opportunity for myself and for all the people that are shareholders of our company.
That is a great note to end on, Taj. I don't know if you want to add anything to that. That's might be hard to follow.
No, Adam definitely covered my main points there. It was a great way to end.
Excellent. So I'm talking to First Nordic Metals, Adam and Taj. I want to thank you so much. Oh, let me give you the ticker. It's FNM on Toronto and FNMCM if you're looking to buy it on the over-counter here in the States. I will put all of this in the show notes below the video as well as on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.